Hey, it's Bill Klaproth, your host for Which Way Is Life, the podcast designed to help you find a healthier, inspired life. Two times a week, I interview trendsetting doctors, fitness professionals, life coaches, authors, and other inspiring guests in a quest for transformational discovery and positive change that you can use in your life. And this is the podcast that dares to be different by getting you to the goods right away. So if you only have a few minutes to listen, we get you something you can hopefully put into action to make your life better right away. Okay, enough of me blabbing. This is episode number 47. So excited to have Dr. Barb Jaffe on with us today. Dr. Jaffe is the author of the book, When Will I Be Good Enough? A Replacement Child's Journey to Healing. It's a syndrome that has been identified recently, but has been around for many years. Barbara's story can help many replacement children and their parents. Dr. Jaffe, thank you for joining me today. I like to start the show right at the top with what I call the one thing. Are you ready?
I am ready. Thank you, Bill.
You bet. Can you quickly share with us one thing someone can do to improve their life today?
For me, and I think perhaps for others, it's a journey inward to look inside to know so many of our answers for a serene and productive and healthy life are found by examining our inner pieces. And that's where I went with my book, and that has helped me to live a joyful, full life.
Oh, I like that. Start with a journey inward. I like it.
Thank you.
Dr. Jaffe, oh yes. Before we dig into your story, let us in a bit on your personal life. Who are you when you're not saving the world?
When I'm not saving the world, I am an English professor, and I focus on writing and help students find their writer's voice, because that's really where strong writing can come from. I live in Los Angeles. I have three grown sons and two grandchildren and a beautiful poodle Bichon who I love so much, so sweet. And I've been married for about 40 years, and my husband and I grew up together.
Wow. How cool is that?
Literally within our marriage.
Wow, that's pretty cool. All right, so you're an English professor. I better talk good today.
No, I'm off duty. It's okay.
Okay. All right, before we dig into your story, I quickly want to mention Which Way Is Life is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Which Way Is Life. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Now, Dr. Jaffe, as you say, you were born soon after your two-year-old brother died, before your mom had a chance to grieve and pick up the fragmented pieces of her shattered heart. In essence, you were a replacement child then for your brother Jeffrey, is that right?
Yes, that's right. I was born to replace him with the understanding my mother had shared with me that they really only wanted two children, so if Jeffrey had lived, that I wouldn't have been born. Hmm. And that is really the definition of a replacement child. However, a lot of the qualities and characteristics that I grew to own, kind of feeling less than, never quite enough, a lot of us can relate to even without being replacement children.
Right. So you say in your life roles, friend, student, wife, mother, daughter, you felt like you were always, or you always had runner-up status.
I felt that way, and I never really knew why early on. I never defined myself as a replacement child, but I always felt like I was trying to prove myself. I was always trying to make people happy, very people-pleasing. I, of course, started with my mother wanting, I sensed that something was not quite right, and that I wanted so much to make her happy. That became my life's mission. So in many of my roles, as you had mentioned, motherhood, as a new wife, even in my career, I always felt that I needed to work twice as hard, that I just, the pieces were just a little fragmented, and I knew it didn't have to be that hard.
So your mom didn't make that a conscious decision, right, to treat you basically, you know, with runner-up status. I mean, she didn't really know she was doing it. It just kind of organically manifested in her actions.
Right. No, she truly did the best she could. She was devastated from Jeffrey's death. As I had written about, her doctor paid her a house call in those days in the early 1950s. And she was, of course, hysterical. And he literally slapped her across the face and said, "You need to snap out of it, move on. You have a child, have another." And that was kind of as she would sadly joke with me that was her therapy at the time. But she did the best she could with the tools that she had at the time.
So how did you come to understand this? Are there specific signs and symptoms?
Well, I always was a writer. I always wrote the things that were very powerful for me. Early on, I kept a diary, as a lot of kids do. And as I grew, I just felt that there were just things were so much harder for me, even harder than my older brother, who's almost 7 years older than I. And I began to write more. And in the reflections, I realized that that truly that was my issue, that I just didn't feel good enough, that I had to do so much more just to make myself feel like everybody else. The irony is that so many people feel that way, but we don't share it. So when people have read my story, they say, I could really relate. I'm not a replacement child, but I could really relate. And so it wasn't until I finished what was to be my manuscript that I started to even Google the idea of replacement children. And lo and behold, there was a book written called The Replacement Child by Judy Mandel. And there was a doctor who was doing research on replacement children, and that is Abigail Brenner, MD, who wrote a book called The Unconscious Script, Replacement Children and Unconscious Script. And in that, there is an idea of the replacement child syndrome. There are certain qualities and characteristics of replacement children. And going through them, it was very much myself. I was exactly that, the replacement child. So it wasn't until, you know, probably in the last 5 years that I really put all of the pieces together.
And so then what did you do to rebuild your life and regain your own self-worth? What was that process?
A lot of inward introspection, as I had started the program with. I did a lot of writing. I did The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. I have been to therapy. I've done different programs, group work. And it was all about not seeing myself as a victim, but seeing myself as somebody who could do the work. And, you know, it's not easy, but I did a lot of the work to make myself whole again, asking questions of myself, doing some guided writing, meditation writing, that enabled me to see what I could do to make myself stronger. And some of those actual exercises are in my book. But it took a lot of time to just go inward.
I was just going to say, you had mentioned at the beginning, journey inward, and it sounds like exactly that's what you did. So you said there's some exercises in your book. Can you share a couple of those with us right now?
Sure, absolutely. One of the things I looked at that really helped me with prioritizing my world was 20 years from now, I'd ask myself a question, 20 years from now, what would be more important? Would it be playing with my son because he wanted to play a game when he was little, or would it be cleaning the house, which I felt that I needed to do as part of the job of staying home and doing my work? And it helped provide clarity for me and my priorities, that I knew that one day my son would be grown and I wouldn't be able to even have that opportunity. And that provided tremendous clarity for me. And that was one of the things that I worked on. Another is to really focus on ourselves. And it's not selfish, it's just self-care and focusing on the things that I needed for myself, realizing that in order to help other people, I really first had to help myself and not deprive myself of things. I call it like the burnt toast syndrome. As a mother growing up, if I ever burnt the toast, I took the burnt toast and gave everybody the good piece. And that has changed. You know, either I turn it into croutons so I don't waste the toast, or make myself a new piece of bread. Silly little things that really add up to make myself, you know, important.
Right, the burnt toast syndrome. So was there an aha moment when you were searching and you were going inward and you went, oh, wait a minute, this is it. I found it. This is it.
You know, I wish I did have an aha moment. I think for me, it's always been kind of a slow percolating of ideas that kind of all fit together. I think for me, I realize that I do kind of a litmus test to making decisions, what will bring me closer to my serenity or farther away from my serenity. And I base a lot of those decisions on that. Am I still a people pleaser? Yes, but now I like to say it's more on the back burner than the front burner. So there was never a day where I woke up and say, oh, wow, there's such clarity. But it's just very slowly the shades have been pulled back, which I guess is fine too.
Right. So
slow but sure.
Right. Well, and that's what, as long as you get there,
exactly.
You know, the speed doesn't count as long as you get there. And that's the most important thing. And let me ask you this then. So are all replacement children, do they all have replacement children syndrome?
No, I think so much has to do with the way in which the situation is communicated. You know, sadly, there are siblings who have ill brothers and sisters, and of course, the ill child is going to get a certain amount of attention that maybe the healthy one won't get. But so much of it has to do with communication. In our house growing up, while my father was okay talking about Jeffrey's death, my mother did not want to talk about it at all. So there was this sense of inability to talk about the little boy whose pictures were around the house and whispers. And we grew up with a lot of secrets related to that. And I think that was one of the things that established that syndrome, because I think when there is communication and parents able to grieve healthily, in those days, as I said, in the early 1950s, there weren't the parental groups that they have now about loss. Their therapy was not something that was necessarily more mainstream. My mother never appreciated therapy and looked down at that idea. So there were so many things that could have been different had there been communication. So just because there is a loss in a family doesn't mean that that child will grow up as a replacement child with those qualities like I have. So much is about just being able to talk about the loss.
Right, and your mom really held a lot of stuff in. I mean, she really suffered.
Did.
And she felt guilty for the loss of your brother, right?
I do believe that's true. And, of course, it was no one's fault. He got ill with meningitis and died within 6 weeks. But as parents often do, we feel guilty for things, and she carried that. And obviously, when I would get sick, this was very hard for her. Even getting a cold or the flu was very hard.
Well, it's too bad that she couldn't come to find the relief and the realization that you have.
Yes, that's true. But what she couldn't do for me, she was able to do for my children, and she was a wonderful grandmother, and I truly appreciated that.
So your goal is to help others pursue a full and honorable life, one they can pass on to their children and then to future generations. So what are the steps then to achieving a full and honorable life?
Good question. I think is to examine our different roles, and if we are unhappy or feel as if we're not quite where we should be, instead of avoiding these issues and pushing them under the carpet, is to really examine them. And I know that sometimes we feel worse before we start to feel better by doing so, but when we can explore those different areas, we really can set ourselves free. And we don't have to do it all at once. It's a step-by-step process. But just to say, like, for example, I always felt very inadequate as a young mother, and felt that if my children misbehaved, it was the result of me, and if my children were great, it was in spite of me. And I was so hard on myself, and it just took me a long time. And talking with people, someone once said to me, you know, good enough is just fine. And who knew that I would end up writing a book that would say, that would have that in the title. And it's just about exploring the pieces of our lives that we're really not happy with, and to examine why.
And pay attention to your feelings. Really,
absolutely.
I think that
and not
says
to
a
deny
lot.
Them.
Yes.
And not to put them on anybody else or look to others to make ourselves whole, to wait for someone to know what we're thinking. That has helped me greatly. Being married for a long time, earlier on I would say, well, he knows who I am. He must know that I want such and such or to do such and such. How could anyone know? whether we've lived with them longer or shorter. And when we want something, we need to be able to articulate it and say it to other people. And that took me a long time to realize.
Mm-hmm. So examine your different roles, pay attention to your feelings. And what you went through, like you said at the beginning, you don't necessarily have to be a replacement child to have feelings of unworthiness. So for anyone, for any reason, who may feel less than good enough like you felt, what's your message to them today?
That we can all feel good enough, and that it just takes a lot of internal work to be able to examine the pieces of why we don't feel good enough. But certainly it will not stop us from living wonderful, full lives. And that's exactly what I did in this book. In a way, I took myself apart, examining the pieces, and was able to put myself back together in a very, what I like to think of as a rich tapestry.
Mm. Yeah, kind of like pieces. When you said I didn't have an aha moment, I was thinking in my head, you kind of were putting pieces of a puzzle together.
Exactly.
And when you
put the pieces together, sometimes they may not fit 100%, but, you know, they're perfectly fine. And I've let go of that feeling of having to be perfect in every area of my life.
Well, that's another good lesson, too. If you're always striving for that perfection, you're often going to be let down and feel, gosh, I'm not good enough. You know,
I didn't
achieve that. I'm a loser.
That's right. And I've also come to realize, in terms of expectations, that expectations really are planned disappointments, and that the only expectations I really have is of myself to do the best that I can do every day. But for others, I don't have to have unrealistic expectations.
Another good thing that you can put into practice is just really understand the effects that expectations can have on you, and misguided expectations can really hurt you in the long run.
Absolutely. So I've let that go. Just let it flutter away like a butterfly.
Let it go. Right. Well, coming up, we get the high five from Dr. Jaffe. But first, if I could ask a favor, if you have an iTunes account after the interview with Dr. Jaffe, jump on over to iTunes, find my podcast. Just go in the search bar, type in Which Way Is Life. I'll pop right up. And if you could, rate and review the show. And by doing that, we gain a wider audience and it gives us a chance to help more people. And that's what this podcast is all about. So if you would do that for me, I would really, really appreciate it. The high five with Dr. Jaffe is next. Which Way Is Life is brought to you by Audible.com. And just for listening to Which Way Is Life, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check it out. So if you like listening to podcasts like this one, you're going to love Audible.com. So I would recommend you check it out and browse all the books you can download for free with a 30-day trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/ and then type in Which Way Is Life. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ Which Way Is Life for your free audio book. Time for the high five with my guest today, Dr. Barb Jaffe. Barb, are you ready?
Yes, I am.
All right, question number one. If your mom was still with us today, what would she think of your transformation?
I think she'd be very proud of me, because I think no matter what, in terms of our relationship, there was pride in me. She wasn't always able to articulate it, so I think she'd be very proud of the woman I am.
That's wonderful. All right, question number two. Knowing what you know now, being the woman that you are today, what advice would you give your younger self when you were going through this?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. I would say be gentle with yourself. Be as kind to yourself as you are to other people, because you deserve it. I was so hard on myself as I matured, and it wasn't until fairly recently that I just gave myself a break and said, you're just fine the way you are. That's what I would say.
Such good advice for anyone listening to this right now. Be kind to yourself. Do it. Do it. Because when you're not kind to yourself, when you're hard on yourself, that's when bad things happen and bad thoughts and things manifest themselves in other ways. So be kind to yourself. I love that, Barb. Thank you. Question number three, tell me about someone or something that inspires you today.
Well, I am going to talk about my sister-in-law, Marilyn. She inspires me because she is a beautiful person. She gives of herself every day does not ask for anything in return and truly gets joy just from the little things in life. And she was brought into my family by my brother almost 50 years ago. And she has been my best friend all of these years and has really been my moral and emotional compass over these years. And she knows how much I love her. I have such gratitude for her. And she has really helped me through so many storms. She is inspiring.
Oh, I love that. I love all of those kind words and things you had to say about her. It warmed my heart just hearing you talk about her in such loving ways. So thank you for sharing that with us. Question number four, do you have a favorite quote you can share with us?
I do, actually, and it fits so well with the way we began the show with the journey. It's by Ursula Le Guin, and it's, quote, "It is good to have an end to journey towards, but it is the journey that matters in the end."
Oh, I love that. That's so good. I've never heard that phrased that way. And we will put that up on the show notes page at radiomd.com so you can find it right there. And question number five, finish this sentence. Throughout my life, the most important thing I've learned is?
To honor myself with the love and respect and care that I give other people. And as a result, then I can be the most productive, wonderful person to other people.
Oh, that's beautiful. I've asked that question a ton of times, and that could be one of my favorite answers.
And no more burnt toast syndrome, right? No more burnt toast.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And this has taken me a lifetime to realize that.
Well, we're glad that you did, and thank you for sharing that with us. And as I do on all of my high five questions, I post those up on the show notes page. So if you want to read that again, that will be posted up on the show notes at radiomd.com. I loved how you phrased that. Well, Dr. Jaffe, thank you so much for joining me today. How can we connect with you?
You can go to my website, which has all the links to my Psychology Today writing, information on my book, and some photos, and another blog that's attached to my website. And so I'll spell my website is BarbaraAnnJaffe.com. That's BarbaraAnnJaffe, E.com.
Very good. And again, we will have a link on the show notes page at radiomd.com for that. And good luck with the book, When Will I Be Good Enough? A Replacement Child's Journey to Healing. Dr. Jaffe, thank you for being on with me today. And if I could leave you with one of my own favorite quotes as we close out the show, it is, "Remember to enjoy the little things in life, because one day you will look back and realize they were the big things." Dr. Jaffe, thank you so much again.
So true. Thank you, Bill. I read about you and how much you give every day, because that's really what your focus is on, and that's what mine is too, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for that. That's so good. And again, thank you for your time, and have a wonderful afternoon.
Okay, you too.
Love that interview with Dr. Jaffe. Hopefully, you're going to take some of the wonderful things she said and adapt them to your own life so you can live a better life. That's what this podcast is all about. And if I could ask one more time, jump on over to iTunes, rate and review the podcast. It gives us a chance to reach a wider audience. Which Way is Life is produced by RadioMD.com, award-winning health podcasts. I'd also like to thank my producer, Pamela Moore. I'm Bill Klaproth. You can find me at Which Way is Life on Twitter and Facebook. You can also check out the show notes at RadioMD.com. For all of my episodes. Thanks for listening and stay well.